Thank you. We were back on the record after the lunch break for the STEP SEPA appeal hearing for the WoodSpring Suites Hotels. Let's see, we were continuing with direct testimony. Mr. Cartman, do you want to continue with your questions? Can you hear me just fine?
Yep. And I would love to continue, Mr. Schramm, if you're ready to go.
I'm ready.
And I think so. Anything else we need to? Oh, yes, Mr. Wachter.
Yeah, excuse the interruption, Mr. Cartman. I just want to handle a housekeeping matter which doesn't pertain to this current witness, but I want to give everybody an update. As far as I know, Jeff Smith is still on course to join us tomorrow. I
Okay.
know there'd been at least some folks had some expressed some concerns. I've been informed that I need to make a substitution of a person on our witness list. We've identified Matthew Bryant, who is in the fire marshal's staff, as the person who would be speaking to the subject of fire apparatus access. And I need to announce that he's going to be replaced by David Lynam, Lynam, who is the county's fire marshal. I am informed that it was Mr. Lynam and former fire marshal Tina Turner who performed the evaluation of fire equipment apparatus access. And I can, if that creates a problem, I can
You know,
certainly.
I don't think fire access and circulation is at issue. So, if is my understanding of that c correct? It's the
If I may, Ms. Examiner, I'm assuming that's in reference to there's a claim for inadequate SEPA analysis of public service impacts in,
and that.
I believe, the non-primary
And
appellant.
I'm basing this on kind of the testimony and evidence that was presented at hearing, because you know it's not uncommon for appeals to raise more issues than actually are presented at hearing. So I guess my take on correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm looking to the appellants on this, that the fire access and circulation is not an issue. Is that correct?
We're not raising any issues related
Okay.
to
Yeah.
fire access.
So, your witness on fire access would not be needed then, Mr. Wachter, unless, am I missing something?
I can't do the appellant's case for them,
Right, right.
but I need to, I just needed to make everyone aware that there's a
Okay.
different person. If there's some reason that he needs to be interviewed after hours, I can certainly make that happen.
Okay. Oh, thank you for that clarification. I guess for purpose of the hearing, I wouldn't need to hear any testimony on that. The decision would not be addressing fire circulation or fire inadequacy in terms of, you know, as a basis for the appeal issues. So let's see. And then you said, Mr. Walker, you said Jeff Smith looks like Wednesday. You know, I don't want him to jeopardize his health or any, I don't know the circumstances, but we'll adjust as needed. So yeah,
All right, thank you for that.
understood. Okay, so Mr. Cartman, back to you. Mr. Schramm, you of course remain sworn in. And I guess we'll turn it over to Mr. Cartman.
Thanks. I guess actually before I begin with Mr. Schramm, I would just ask, I believe the public service impact claim appeared in the same section of the appeal notice as a couple of claims referencing light and noise. If it would be possible to confirm that those claims are not being pursued either, that would save us a bit of time.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Is that
I can jump in for our part. I'm not being pursued by us. Thank you.
We're not raising those issues either.
Okay. All right. Does that, Mr. Cartman, does that address that question?
It does. I guess I'm wondering, I don't know, maybe when we finish with Mr. Schramm, because I think he's addressing the testimony we heard yesterday, if it would make sense to talk through the appeals and whether there are any other claims that are being abandoned, because we do have some other testimony that was intending to address.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea, Mr. Cartman. I think really it's the traffic, meaning, and by traffic, I mean kind of the parking and circulation. So kind of a,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, maybe we can revisit that when we're done with Mr. Schramm, but I appreciate the clarification.
Yep.
Thank you. All right. Hello again, Mr. Schramm.
Good afternoon.
So I believe where we left off was I was showing you this image from Exhibit B10, and we had just talked about your determination of the number of trips that you are predicting are likely to circulate through these credit union drive aisles.
Yes.
And I guess with those numbers in mind, but you know, mostly from kind of a more I guess qualitative perspective, if you could just talk about what you are seeing in the images that I'm about to show you, with reference specifically to whether you have any concerns that hotel trips circulating through this area will cause conflicts with circulation, potential safety impacts, that sort of thing. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
So anything that you are seeing, and we'll get closer to the credit union itself in a moment, but first just on this page 10 of Exhibit B10.
I think we had this one before, but just orientation, this is coming directly off the North Myrie Road driveway and looking northerly toward the drive aisle, headed toward the credit union.
And then starting on page 11, can you point out some of the elements of the parking lot and drive aisles that you are seeing here as related to those that potential for circulation impacts?
Sure. So I'll start off by saying that this is, I would say, pretty typical or common design for a business park where you have a drive aisle that is loaded or served by parking on both sides. So the drive aisle is designed and appears here plenty wide enough to handle two-way traffic. Specifically to the right or looking to the east, I see, several. Again, I don't know exactly how many, but there's parking stalls available. Looks like primarily used by the credit union. Further closest to the maybe there's another image, but at least from this one you can see that there are parking stalls that are 90 degree right up in front of the bank building. And at this particular viewpoint, you can also see the drive-through or the bank, the drive-up banking locations that are serviced by the credit union. And then finally, just to the left, the gravel area is the kind of a small version or a portion of the proposed hotel site.
And I'm sorry, you may have mentioned this also. We're also seeing the credit union drive-through area with the ATM under the black pavilion in this image. Is that right?
Yeah, I classified it as a drive up,
Okay.
drive through, but I guess those can be used the same.
What's the red curb striping indicating here?
Yeah, the red curb striping indicates a fire, or typically would be red would indicate a no parking area. I can't tell here if it's faded or not. Sometimes on the red curbing, we also see white painting that says no parking. This particular corner looks like someone has added some additional channelization elements. Those are look to be kind of portable devices that will help. Maybe there's a little bit reflectorization on them that helps to direct traffic around that corner because there is curbing right there. So,
Those are the yellow, I assume, rubber or plastic things sticking up from the red curb towards the center of the image.
that's correct.
Is there anything about the design of this parking lot that would indicate to you that vehicles would not be able to park or back out safely, or that pedestrians would not be able to cross the parking lot safely with some additional vehicles circulating through?
No, in fact, I think this design is pretty standard for servicing a business park where you see a lot of interaction between vehicles, parked cars, and pedestrians.
And then I think you mentioned towards the right center of this image, there is, I think it's a red pickup truck with its rear lights on. Do you see that?
I see that, yes.
And if we follow that pickup truck in the direction it appears to be heading, would we see what's shown on page 12 of this image?
Yeah, the image before showed a vantage point where you're looking directly north. This image will have been if you continued around the building. So now we're on the north side of the credit union building and we're looking directly to the west. So this would have been, if in reference to the red truck, it would have been the truck having made a 90-degree turn around the building corner.
And I guess same questions as I was asking you before. Can you describe what you're seeing in this image with reference to potential circulation or safety impacts?
Yes, so what I see here is some additional red striping or red painting, which indicates no parking and fire lane. I'm trying to. It looks like the there is some painted words that says no parking. So and it looks like people are abiding by that and not parking there. In terms of the width, I did scale it off the site plan from before, and it looks like the width from curb to curb is roughly 24 feet. The typical minimum for two-way travel is 20 feet. Most agencies' fire codes require a minimum of 20 feet. This appears to be closer to like 24 feet, so plenty of width for two-way travel. I would note that there's no pedestrian or sidewalk facilities here, so this would not be the best place for pedestrians. The pedestrians can utilize the sidewalk that is, you can see it on the right of the photo, that's Ridgetop Boulevard. So pedestrians can go there if they wanted to occur, but I wouldn't expect that this would be a place where pedestrians would travel because there's no amenities for them.
Great. Anything else you'd point out about this image before we move on?
I don't think so.
Well then continuing around the building, can you tell us what we're seeing on page 13 of Exhibit B10 here?
Yeah, so this would be continued counterclockwise circulation around the credit union. You can't see it here, but credit union would be on the left. So this is basically the next corner around the building. And I guess maybe some might call this the back parking, but it's still parking that is used by and proximate to the credit union. Yeah, again, you see here striped parking stalls on both sides of the drive aisle. And again, you have to note that the building is just to the left. The other thing we notice here is that there are pedestrian amenities here. There is a sidewalk. You can see a sidewalk that on the left side has a yellow kind of stamped element. That's for a recognition for ADA, American Disabilities Act, utilization of recognition of a sidewalk that ramps up to a sidewalk that is typically 6 inches above the curb. That sidewalk, I'm pretty certain, will carry a pedestrian all the way to the building entry. And so that's expected that even though it's not striped with painting, this does appear to be the pedestrian location to cross the drive aisle to get out to the driveway, which is on the right side of this image, which is the driveway that goes out to Ridgetop Boulevard. And there's a sidewalk there it connects to that will connect to Ridgetop as well.
Yeah, and just I think this was clear from the site plan, but so if we're looking at Mr. Sherm, you were just describing the yellow pieces on the sidewalk, and we can see two of those in this image, is that right?
Yes.
And the right hand of those two that connects to a sidewalk, and that sidewalk is then adjacent to another paved area that is separated from this parking lot.
Yeah, it connects to the sidewalk that is along the driveway access out to Ridgetop Boulevard.
Yep, and so that driveway access, which we can see a bit of in the right center, I guess, of this image, that's what could be used by cars going from Ridgetop to the hotel rear parking lot without entering this credit union parking area.
Yes, and hopefully there's another image that illustrates that better than this one, but that's correct.
Yep, and what is in the left center of this image? It looks like there is a ramp with a railing that's colored green. Do you see that?
I do.
What is that?
So again, hopefully I think there's hopefully another image that shows us a little bit better, but that is the ramp or the access from off of the drive aisle from Ridgetop that provides access up to the bank drive through or on driving banking ATM stalls or ATM locations.
Okay. I'm going now to page 14 of Exhibit B10. Mr. Schramm, I didn't actually have any questions for you about this one in particular, but just because you mentioned a clearer image, does this show that ramp a bit closer?
It does show the ramp a bit closer, and it also shows how circulating the continued circulation around the credit union connects the drive aisle to the access that will connect with Ridgetop as well.
And Mr. Schramm, I guess just before I go on to the next image, I will point out in the center of this image, kind of behind the tree with red leaves, do you see there's a tall conifer?
I see that.
And do you see on the left-hand side that this Google Maps or Google Street View image was taken in October 24, 2024?
Yes, I see that.
And so, just going on to page 15, I want to acknowledge that the Google Street View image was from September 2015, so from earlier than that previous image, and that tall conifer is a bit shorter than it appeared in the previous image. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, that looks right.
So, given that, just looking at this image on page 15 of Exhibit B10, just to talk about this interchange between the different circulation paths, can you tell us what we're looking at here?
Yeah, so now we're on the drive aisle that accesses the site to Ridgetop. Looking back, kind of south, easterly, you can see the credit union building. This photo appears to be taken when the credit union wasn't operating, so it could have been an evening or a non-hour. So we don't see any parked cars. Again, you can see the image of the ramp that leads up to the drive-through banking, and you can also see how the continuation of that drive aisle will eventually, it just ends there with no curb into what's a kind of a combination of gravel, dirt, and grass, the vacant lot that will occupy the proposed hotel.
And so that area at the right center of this image, kind of where the sidewalk on the very right side ends, that's where the hotel rear parking lot access will begin.
That's correct.
And I guess then looking at this image with the same question I was asking you before, does anything that you're seeing here about this configuration raise concerns about circulation or safety impacts from additional hotel trips in this area?
No, it does not.
Going down two more pages to page 17 of Exhibit B10. Is this, I think this is just the same area we were just looking at, kind of from the opposite side. Is that right?
Yeah, this one also shows a more recent image with the larger tree. Again, this is another viewpoint, this time on the drive aisle kind of ramp up to the credit union, looking westerly toward the access aisle that will connect with Ridgetop.
And Mr. Shrim, I'm sorry, I don't think you mentioned it. Is there a speed hump separating the driveway from the ramp up to the credit union drive-through?
Yeah, it looks like from this photo, and I remember experiencing that when I was there, it looks like someone has put in a speed bump there that right at where the intersection of the drive aisles are, on the other side of the tree.
And I guess again, same question, just thinking about vehicles, coming from and into the credit union parking lot area, the Ridgetop driveway access, the rear hotel parking lot on the left in this image, and then also vehicles heading up this ramp towards the drive-throughs. Is there anything here that concerns you about potential conflicts or safety issues?
Nothing that overly concerns me. I would, just want to make sure that, that tree and who's ever doing the maintenance on it is pruned enough so that there's good visibility. Right now, it looks like, and when I was there was good visibility for someone who's coming, a driver who's coming around the credit union or credit union user who wants to make a 180-degree turn to get up to the drive-through banking, or even a car that's coming off of Ridgetop. That's turning. These are conflicting movements. These are low speed because of the curve and the nature of the drive aisles. And within a business park, this is a common design. The speed bump probably helps to make sure that speeds remain slow to make sure that maneuvers are safe.
Thank you. Going to the next page, page 18 of Exhibit B10. What are we looking at here?
Looks like about the same spot, but now we're looking up or eastbound or easterly to the drive aisle, which is striped. I think there's a residual. You can kind of see at the bottom of the map. Maybe there's a painting or paint striping that shows an arrow. This is a one-way ramp up to the drive-through banking.
And does the ramp also have a speed hump on
It does appear to have a speed hump. Yes, speed bump is what I
it?
would call it.
Is there room on this ramp for if cars need to queue for access to those drive-through elements of the credit union? Would they have some room to do so?
Yeah, it appears there's queuing not only in a linear direction, like behind, if there is a backup behind the drive-through aisles or the drive-up spots, but it appears that there's enough width for, let's say, if the queue, if for whatever reason there's a longer queue in one of the lanes, there's ability to drive by or even stack two lanes if necessary.
And then I'll ask you more about this later, Mr. Schramm, but just with this image, did you hear the testimony yesterday about cut-through traffic, both in the drive-through aisles and on the hotel parcel?
Yes, I did.
And did you understand that to be referring to the two areas that we're looking at right now, this paved ramp and then the area to the right in this image where there's gravel spanning the length of the hotel parcel?
Yeah, this is where I understand those observations were made.
Great. Going now just to the following page, page 19 of Exhibit B10. Mr. Schramm, what are you seeing here? And same question, can you talk about this image with respect to circulation in the credit union?
Yeah. So it appears to, well, this is an image that is taken right at the drive up or drive through banking lanes. And again, looking easterly, where you can see a little bit on the left, there's three different locations that vehicles can drive up and use the banking. And this is also showing a one-way operation where vehicles are intended to only be going in this direction, the easterly, and then they're accessing the drive aisle that serves the site. My expectation is, again, it's not my testimony because I didn't observe these, but my understanding is that the cut through that was described was occurring in this outside lane, that was, intended for drive up banking purposes.
And can we see from the red pickup truck and the silver car facing it on the right side of this image, does that show, two cars proceeding in opposite directions in the same drive aisle?
Yeah, that's a good illustration that there's available space for two-way traffic.
Thank you. And then I guess just finally, Mr. Schramm, looking at the drive-through from the other direction in the image on page 20 of Exhibit B10, anything that you'd add based on what you're seeing here?
This is just a maybe a better depiction of the fact that there's three locations for drive-up banking. And it also shows in this image a little bit better the one-way striping on the pavement. You see the arrow. You also see it's a little bit faded, but you see exit, the word exit. So drivers who might be coming from the drive aisle will be notified that this is an exit only. The do not enter sign also helps direct drivers that this is not a direction for them to travel. It's not allowed to enter that way. So there's several indicators of the intended purpose of the drive-through and the direction that cars are supposed to travel.
Thank you. Mr. Schramm, I guess going back to what you were talking about before, if we were to assume one vehicle every 4 minutes at the upper end of the range that you predicted, or even one vehicle every 2 minutes, double that prediction from the vehicle generated by the hotel traveling through the areas we've just looked at, I guess just thinking about those images, can you talk about what how we should understand what the impact of that would be?
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I think that let's I would, let me kind of break it up into what I think would be experienced by a driver who's using the bank drive-through. I'm sure the frequency and the amount of time that each particular person takes at a drive-up banking will vary, probably vary significantly depending on how much transaction are happening, but the amount of traffic that I've observed and it's kind of coming through the bank area, when that vehicle exits the kind of the drive-up banking area, if they were to have to, for example, wait there and wait to get onto the drive aisle, the impact that they would feel from the hotel with one car every 2 minutes, would in some cases probably not even be noticeable because they're probably waiting there, less than 10 or 15 seconds just to turn onto the drive aisle. So there may be an occasion where someone who's coming from the hotel might circulate through there. They might, sense that impact. But I would say for the most part, one car every 2 to 4 or 7 minutes is not going to significantly impact the ability for drivers to exit the bank drive-through and get onto the drive aisle. As it relates, well, I just wanted to answer it in two parts. The other conflict point or the other kind of impact area that I would like to focus on is what would be the experience of someone who is parking in front or in the credit union parking area? What would the impact be to them with a car every 2 or 4 to 7 minutes is what I would estimate. And again, my conclusion is that the additional traffic generated by the hotel would not be significant. And I say that because when you think about just trying to put this in practical terms, someone who is arriving to the credit union and finds a parking stall right up in front of the building is going to pull right into that parking stall, walk into the building, walk out. And they probably wouldn't even notice an additional car that is coming through the drive aisle around the drive-through bank behind the credit union. A person who might experience some impact or conflict would be a vehicle who is parked on the opposite side of the drive aisle from the credit union on the east side. There's, I don't know, a handful, 20 stalls over there. A car who is not able to find parking right up in front of the credit union may park in the one of the striped stalls on the other side of the drive aisle. Think about the amount of time it takes for me to park, accumulate my items, whatever I'm going to bring into the credit union, get out of my car and walk across the drive aisle into the bank. I suppose you could say maybe ranges from a minute to two. Maybe some people are a little bit slower than that. I think some people might even be faster if you're just getting out of your car and driving in. So if that takes 1 to 2 minutes and the hotel generates what I would estimate an additional vehicle every 4 to 7 minutes, I would say that that's not a significant impact. There may be occasions if I were to come to the bank and do that or the credit union and do that, 2 or 3 times a month, I might during one of those times experience a car driving through because they're going to the back of the hotel, and the other 2 times probably wouldn't see a car at all. And that's just, sort of mathematical. If it takes 2 minutes to 1 to 2 minutes to get in and out of a car, and there's only one car every 4 to 7 minutes, I just don't see a significant increase in conflicts under that scenario. So therefore, I don't believe that the additional traffic generated by the hotels circulating the credit union would be to a level of significance that I would be concerned with.
And if you were to assume that the amount of circulation would be an additional vehicle every 2 minutes, would that change your conclusion?
It wouldn't change my conclusion. I think the convenience factor would be less for a customer, but again, my testimony is I don't believe it's going to be one every 2 minutes. But even if it were, I still don't think that rises to the level of significance.
Would a vehicle traveling through the credit union parking lot every 2 minutes prevent I guess parked vehicles from backing out of stalls or prevent pedestrians from walking across the drive aisles for a meaningful amount of time?
No, it certainly wouldn't prevent them from doing it. If I remember right, I think some of the testimony I heard yesterday were terms like it would be less convenient, or it would be, not as ideal, or things like that. So I think what's important as a transportation professional and understanding, what the term significant means and the necessity of understanding what these impacts are. I think what's important to understand is inconvenient is not the same as significant. Someone who has to park, who's not able, if they come up to the credit union and one day who's able to find a parking spot right in the front of the building, and the next time they're there has to park a little bit further away or across the drive aisle. Yeah, that would be less convenient, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's significant. And what I've tried to do is quantify what I believe the number of cars are and the influence that the hotel would have on this location. And I, again, for those reasons, I don't believe that the additional circulation created by the hotel will create a level of significance.
Mr. Schramm, I'm going to show you again exhibit F20, and we are still looking at it rotated so that up is north, or what's the right side of the image is now, or what's usually the right side of the image is now up. And I wanted to ask you about the cut-through route testimony that we were talking about a moment ago. I think the assertion essentially is that the addition of the hotel will occupy the portion of the hotel parcel that some vehicles are currently using to get back and forth between the ridgetop driveway and the rest of the site. Does that sound right so far?
Yeah, I believe based on the documentation from Transpo's work and the testimony, that's a good description of my understanding is they've observed some vehicles cutting through the what will be the proposed hotel area from Ridgetop to the southern portion of the site.
And I understood the assertion to be that as a result of that, that will further increase the number of vehicles either cutting through the credit union drive-through or drive-up aisles, or just circulating through the credit union parking lot more generally. Could you respond to those assertions?
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I heard it yesterday, and I think I'd like to kind of just I would respond in two ways. First of all, as I did with the as what I tried to do with the quantification of hotel trips circulating around the credit union, I think it's important to quantify the number of these cut-through trips that were documented and testified about. And my understanding from the documentation is that there were 10 cut through trips in the bank drive aisle, and there were 19 through that were observed through the, let's just call it the hotel, part the lot, the gravel lot. I think it's important to understand what, at least my understanding of what was documented is those were observed over a 5 hour period. So let's just add them together. 29 cars over a 5 hour period is, well, I don't want to do the math wrong. It should be simple math, right? That's about,
About six cars per hour.
6 cars per hour. I mean, that's a one car every 10 minutes. So while I'm not disputing that these cut through cars were observed, I expect a transportation professional will document that. That's true. I'm not disputing that that probably is what was observed. What I think is important to understand is what's at hand here, in my opinion, is the level of significance. So even if these cars are cutting through, the amount of them is still one car every 6 minutes. That's not a big number. That's not a, in my opinion, a significant number of cars that are cutting through when you factor in that it happens over a 5 hour period. And so then the other thing that I look at, I mentioned I was going to make two points. That was the first one. The second one is when I look at, again, my best estimation here is why are cars cutting through? And I can just give my professional judgment here. When I imagine a car who's cutting through from Ridgetop down through the site to get to the south, it's probably because of a shortcut, probably the convenience of instead of staying on the road, Ridgetop and Myrie and turning into Myrie driveway, some of these vehicles probably felt that it was a shorter path to go directly through this vacant lot down to the south. Well, I can't think of another reason why someone would do that. It's, not as, convenient in my opinion. And so when the when so what's going to happen to these 29 cars who were observed doing this over a 5 hour period? What I think is going to happen is the convenience of the cut through, which may be faster, goes away. Because when you put the hotel there, that vehicle who was or would have been coming off a ridgetop cutting through the site to go all the way through the site is a very circuitous, slower path. They're going to have to come through ridgetop, go through a couple speed bumps, circulate around the building, come out front, go through the go past both Myrie driveways through the the area where there's pedestrians and cars parking in front of the credit union and the hotel. So I think my conclusion is that I think most, if not all, of those cut through will go away, and those cars will stay on ridgetop and use Myrie. So I don't think it's a fair assessment to say those cars that are currently doing that will continue to circulate around the will continue on the site and circulate around the credit union. I didn't hear anything to suggest that there was evidence that they would, but I'm just offering my opinion that to suggest that they will adding the hotel will create more circuitous travel because of that cut through. I don't agree if that were the conclusion.
And so just to summarize what you were saying, Mr. Schramm, is it right to say that the cut-through cars coming from the north would necessarily be coming east on Ridgetop and then turn right into that driveway on Ridgetop
Correct.
before proceeding south to other points on the Business Park site?
That's right.
And so they could follow that path you're saying by just continuing straight on Ridgetop and turning right on Myrie?
Right. And in my testimony, what I'm saying is I think it would, with the hotel, by adding the hotel, it would make that cut through route slower. So my estimation is that those cars would no longer cut through. It would be faster for them to stay on Ridgetop and use Myrie Road to enter the one of the driveways on the southern part of the site.
And did you hear Ms. Herstein say she saw cars cutting through in both directions, so also going towards the north?
To be honest with you, I can't recall her saying if it were both ways, but if they were both ways, that wouldn't change my conclusion and my assessment of this.
Why would it not?
Well, because whether they're cutting, they're cutting through because they must believe that there's a shortcut. Instead of going out onto the street, it's faster to cut through the site. Why a car would go northbound and cut through the site, knowing that Ridgetop is limited to only right out, I don't know why a car would do that. Perhaps a car is cutting, maybe some of those cars who might be heading north might be cutting through the vacant lot to get to the credit union drive-through aisle. I don't know. Again, this is just a speculation. I'm not sure. If I, like I said, I question whether I heard two-way, but even if there was two-way, I didn't hear how much, what quantity of that, of those 29 cars were in that direction.
Sure. And if they were heading north and heading out Ridgetop, as you said, they would have to turn right and so would necessarily be heading east on Ridgetop from there.
They would have to turn right, correct? And again, that just further confirms my assumption that they would not do that because they would have to turn right and they're going to end up back over by the Myrie Road intersection. So, I
And so
mean,
they could
they're it's
access
not
all
going to,
of,
yeah.
sorry.
So, yeah. So they could either go in other directions or, so they could, well, what I'm saying is that I don't, if there were some cars that did that, I don't understand why they would. Because they would, I don't believe even with the cut through that it's going to be faster than just getting out onto Myrie Road directly
Thank
in the
you.
driveway.
Thank you. There was some testimony that a physical redesign of the hotel is necessary to provide, I think, safe and otherwise non-impactful access to hotel parking. So, as I understood that, essentially redesigning the hotel building so that there is a drive aisle to the rear parking from the hotel, directly from the front area on that parcel. Did you hear that?
I did.
Do you agree that such a redesign is necessary to provide safe or otherwise sufficient access to the rear parking?
No, I do not agree, and I will just stand behind my testimony. I'm not basing that statement or conclusion based on just, an eyeball or look or a opinion, just based on just an overview of what I see. It's based on all of the description that I made about what how much I would quantify the number of cars that would circulate around. If I felt like the circulation pattern would create significant impact, then I would likely conclude that a redesign would be needed to improve that circulation, but that's not my conclusion.
Thank you. And I guess I'll just ask Mr. Schramm, are you, well, I'll ask that later. Sorry. I wanted to ask you about just a couple of the other comments that we heard from Ms. Herstein and that were included in the rebuttal exhibit. So the first one I wanted to ask about is, I think, comment 7 in the rebuttal exhibit A6, which is where Ms. Herstein said that the February 2025 TIA showed 85% of the AM peak hour hotel trips and 82% of the PM peak hour hotel trips using the Myrie Road driveways. Did you hear that testimony?
Yeah, I read it in the supplemental document, and I also heard her testimony.
So, I am showing you page 16 of exhibit F8, if you're seeing that. And this is figure 5 from your initial TIA. And I guess can you first just put the assertion that we're responding to in your own words. Can you tell us how you understand what that is saying?
Yeah, what I believe that the transfer work is concluded or based on the 82 and 85% that they documented, basically what they did is they totaled the number of inbound and outbound trips that are at each of the four driveways, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then they quantified what percentage of those trips occurred at the each of the driveways. And they determined that when you add them all up, intersections 4 and 5, which are the two on Myrie Road, carry roughly 80 to 85%, most of the trips that we assigned for the hotel in the original traffic study we did.
Okay, so just to say that in a different way, looking at the bottom here of this page 16, the assertion is that if you add the numbers next to the curved arrows, which, as you said earlier, are what show the turning movements in and out of the driveways, if you add all of those numbers in the four boxes up, 82 to 85% of them are in boxes 4 and 5 or 4, 5, and 6 and not in box 3.
I think in boxes 4 and 5. I thought that the statement was 80 to 82 to 85%. I'm just trying to read it here. Would be using the Myrie Road
Okay,
driveways.
excuse me.
Yep.
Then,
Yep.
in boxes 4 and 5. Okay.
Yes.
Could you please respond to that assertion?
Yeah, so the numbers are right. I mean, I'm not arguing that their review of our original traffic study did result in the allocation of hotel trips were predominantly to the Myrie Road driveways. And what I'd like to explain on that, and I think I spent a little bit of time in my earlier testimony when we did the traffic study in February 2025, our focus was to look at sort of a larger picture. We were looking at assigning the trips to the access points on the site based on the travel patterns in the area and the intersections that we were identified for evaluation. So what I would say at that time is we were looking more at a general distribution pattern. We didn't refine our trip assignment to the driveways that specifically reflected the hotel design with the split parking.
And have you now considered the effect of the hotel design and the split parking on how the trips would be allocated among the different driveways?
Yeah, I've spent some time. I mean, as an engineer responsible for our work, I definitely look back at what we did originally, which is shown on the screen here, and then looked at, listen to the testimony and review the documents that they identified. And I can understand the concern that what was evaluated before predominantly, allocated, assigned the hotel trips to the Myrie Road driveways. I think if I were to, knowing what we know about the site now and how it's designed and taking a more specific look at the trip assignment, if I could do this over again, I would reassign some of the trips to better reflect what I believe is some circulation around the credit union and more utilization of the driveway and Ridgetop Boulevard. Order of magnitude, I would say, as we see here, and I'll just take in location number three, which is a Ridgetop driveway. We, in the original traffic study, we identified four trips there, one in and three out. That's roughly about 25%. I think our peak hour trip generation was about 40, might have been 38. So, roughly. So no, that's wrong math. Sorry. If it was 40 in the previous traffic study, we four trips would be roughly about 10% of the total trip generation was assigned to the Ridgetop Boulevard driveway. Considering now, a more detailed look at the circulation and how the parking is allocated, I would estimate that there's probably a shift of 10 to 12 cars that would come. I would probably pull off of Myrie Road and assign to the Ridgetop driveway. We have to understand and remember that the driveway is right in, right out. So while I do expect an increase, I think that, about 10 trips is about what I would reassign there to account for some of the circulation. And so then the question becomes,
Well, let me
what?
stop you just before you go on, Mr. Schramm. So reassigning some trips from Myrie Road to Ridgetop Boulevard, is that reflecting that at least some of those 10 trips that you mentioned would presumably be parked in the rear parking lot and would not need to use Myrie Road for access?
Yeah, that's probably the predominant movement that would be generating those eight. In fact, I could probably think about it would be actually it would be all of the trips now that I think about it, because someone's not going to circulate around the credit union to exit on Ridgetop when they just could have taken the driveway at Myrie. So yeah, those 10 or so trips would be a result of the parked cars and the cars that are on the back parking lot for the hotel.
And so, with that taken into account, is this part of, I guess, your analysis that was done for purposes of the intersection level of service? Would that be in conflict with your prediction about the number of trips circulating through the credit union parking lot?
No, I don't believe it'd be in conflict. I think it actually, really accounts for that, at least in my determination, by assigning more trips from the back parking lot onto Ridgetop. You're correct. I agree with you that those trips who are exiting the site now or even entering there would not need to circulate around the building. This reassignment that I would do is a reflection of the parking lot design and the hotel design with the split parking. And I still stand by the estimate of the number of circulating cars, because in some ways there's a little bit of a different dynamic. It's cars that are coming directly into the lot versus cars that are circulating to get to the lot. The purpose of my, an assessment here is to show that I've done, my own assessment that by modifying, I would modify if I were doing this again to add, 10 more trips to the Ridgetop driveway. The question becomes, does that, at least Mike, the question that I believe is probably, maybe you were going to ask me before, was that, does that create, additional significant impact at the driveway or the study intersections? And that's the assessment that I've done. I'm happy to describe that more if that's where you want to
Yeah,
discuss.
so I think what we've covered so far is responding to the assertion that these figures that we're looking at are inconsistent with the number of circulating vehicles that you've predicted. And I think you've explained that looking back at it, You would change that to better reflect the circulation patterns you predict. Is that right so far?
That's a fair
And
description.
then going on, as I think you were doing, the question then becomes whether that reassignment of trips to these different driveway or between the driveway entrances, whether that affects the intersection and driveway level of circulation calculation, level of service, excuse me, calculations that you made in the initial TIA.
Yeah,
And
that's where I
whether.
was going. Yeah. So I've done that assessment, or at least at a, at a high enough level to be able to respond with my professional opinion. And here's how I describe that. I mean, if I were to add 10 more trips, there would probably be, maybe two or three of those that are additional entering trips, and probably, seven or eight would be exiting trips because of the nature of the right in, right out. So adding seven or eight exiting right turns above the three, a right turn movement with very little conflict is going to operate at a very good level service. So going from three to eight is, in my estimation, probably going to increase the average delay by less than a second. And then carrying those eight trips over to the intersection one, which is the signalized intersection of Myrie and Ridgetop. Again, we know that that intersection it is operating at level service B in the AM peak hour and C in the PM peak hour. And even the number of hotel trips were identified here showed a fraction, like less than point, I think it was 0.2 or 0.3 additional seconds of delay. Adding, 8 to 10 more trips at that intersection is probably going to add less than a second of additional delay. So I've been doing traffic analysis for 30 years, and I can tell you without, providing a specific documentation that the reassignment of adding 10 more trips to the Bridgetop driveway and out into the street system is not going to substantially, change the level service at those intersections. So that's why I would conclude that, a redistribution and assignment would not create a significant impact.
Thank you. I just have a few more questions for you, Mr. Schramm, hopefully. I wanted to ask quickly, going back to Exhibit B5, your supplemental analysis. I'm on page five of that exhibit, and going back to the trip generation calculation, you did also include here a comparison with the previous retail use. Can you just say briefly what that is describing?
Yeah, just like we did with parking, for the purposes of the supplement, because we were supplementing the work that we had done before, the work before compared, at least in some general senses, how the proposed hotel would be different than the proposed retail. Is standard practice and what I thought was helpful documenting how that would change, just as to understand what would adding a hotel here compared to what was previously identified as a retail use, what would look different, not only from parking or but also from a trip generation perspective. And what this table shows is that from a total traffic generating perspective, the hotel would generate not quite half, but significantly fewer trips throughout the day and a noticeable number of reduced trips during the AM and PM peak hours.
And maybe just jumping to page nine, which is the site plan from the business park that we were looking at before. Just to point out, as I think there was also testimony yesterday, the original configuration of the retail use as proposed in 2005, it would have been possible to access all of the parking stalls on that retail site. Directly from the Myrie Road driveway. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what it. I would agree that that's how it was designed.
So that would be a difference in circulation pattern that would be required for the retail than for the current hotel.
I don't know that I'd say a circulation pattern that would be required. That was a circulation pattern that was designed and identified for a retail use there.
Fair enough. Anything else you would say about the difference between those two, the previously proposed use and the currently proposed use when it comes to access and circulation?
I guess the only other thing I'd note is if we're doing a com when we're doing a comparison of what was previously identified on the site and what is proposed, there's also another change that I think is worth noting, and that is you can see here on the left side of the graphic on the north side of the site, what's identified as Building One Bank was previously identified to have a the banking drive-through lanes on the north side or the opposite side of the building, where the there would not have been the ability for a retail use to circulate around that direction. That those drive aisles were on the north side. That's a different condition than what was actually approved and built, is that those obviously we know now that those drive aisles are on the south side of the building.
Thank you. And Mr. Schramm, maybe going back one step, I guess, because there is some dispute, or at least there's been some discussion of a dispute in terms of how much access to the different parcels in the business park is permitted to the different owners. Have you considered what circulation for the hotel would look like if the ability to circulate through the credit union parking lot was cut off? In other words, if a vehicle going from the front of the hotel to the rear of the hotel had to use the road, including the restricted ridgetop driveway.
Is your question as is, have I thought about what would be different?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I have.
And can you say what in that hypothetical what that would look like?
Yeah. So I think we'd see quite a bit of changed driver behavior. Under your scenario, if I'm understanding it right, you're saying if there were a physical barrier so that the hotel would not be able to, hotel traffic would not be able to use. To go north, they would have to use
Or a legal barrier if
a
we were
legal
to
barrier. Okay, there's
assume
some
that,
barrier.
yeah.
Well, what let's just take them separately. So for the hotel, that would mean that all the hotel trips would have to come either on either the to and from the site on either driveway of Myrie Road. Then there would have to be some ability to circulate down over to the back of the hotel parking lot. But if this physical barrier only existed on the eastern drive aisle, then the hotel, well, let me just break, let me make sure I understand your question. Are
Yeah,
you
maybe
talking about a physical barrier for both everything or?
let me ask it differently, Mr. Schramm. And I don't have to stay on it too long if it's not a useful hypothetical, but just with I'm looking at Exhibit F20. If we were to assume that, a vehicle checking in at the front or the east side of the hotel parcel was going to try to park in the rear, that it would have to do that by going back out on Myrie, turning left, going north, or perhaps going south around the other side, and then accessing that Ridgetop Boulevard driveway in another way. Would that create, in your view, significant adverse traffic impacts to the intersections that circulating vehicle would need to go through?
Yeah, I think I understand the question. I'm not sure I've spent enough time thinking about this specific scenario to be able to say whether that would create a significant adverse impact. What it would do is it would create a significant circuitous route, or some, modified driver behavior. So, in your example, if someone were checking in or pulling into the, the driveway on Myrie to check into the hotel, and then they would. Be re they would decide or be required to park in the back, that vehicle would not be able to turn left into the ridgetop driveway. So that vehicle would either have to go entirely around the block, south to Buckland Hill Road and all the way around in order to take a right turn at ridgetop. Or what I would expect is some drivers might choose to still go left out of Myrie, left at ridgetop. And there's several parking lots, I think, over by the Best Buy and some of the other retail areas. It's Rather than going all the way around the blocks, there might be some cars that choose to turn around on Ridgetop in one of the surface parking lots in the retail, turn around and then turn right into the Ridgetop. Either way, much more circuitous travel on the street system. I'm not able to tell you whether I think that would be significant or not. I haven't spent enough time studying it.
Understood. Zooming out, I guess, Mr. Schramm, and thinking about everything that we've talked about access and circulation, as well as parking. Is there anything, I guess, how do you understand the needs of this hotel with reference to a business park, which I think, as you said earlier in your testimony, is a fairly common form of building arrangement that you've seen. Is there anything particularly unique or atypical about how this is designed that causes you concern with regard to the impacts the appellants were testifying about?
Nothing that causes me significant concern. I mean, one of the reasons that I spent wanted to spend some time doing the parking count myself and spending some time on the site is to drive it, experience it, understand how vehicles are getting in and out of the site, circulating around the site. And I would say that the way the site is designed and the way it operates today is typical of most business parks that have shared access, shared parking. And so really the question that comes is when we put a hotel in this lot, is that going to substantially create new travel patterns and impacts that weren't anticipated? And so that's basically what my work was, is in response to the appeals and some of the concerns, is I wanted to quantify. And my goal here was to testify of how I quantified the additional circulation patterns as a result of the hotel. And so I believe that there's nothing in the business park that, or what the hotel is creating with its configuration that rises to the level of significance for me in terms of, adding it as part of a business park operation.
Thank you, Mr. Schramm. I think I just have one final question, and this was actually going back to the parking issue, just something I neglected to ask you earlier. I'm happy to put it up if it would be helpful, but do you recall the parking deviation standard 17.490030A1 that we were looking at about the unusual nature of the proposed use and whether it's reasonable to expect demand will be accommodated?
Yeah, I remember the citation. Yeah.
I think what I meant to ask was we were talking about that, I think, specifically through the lens of what in Ms. Herstein's report was described as the single parcel scenario. Have you also considered the deviation in the context of the shared parking business park wide scenario?
I have, yes. I agree with you that my testimony before was really focused on the parcel specific. Making sure that if we're just looking at the hotel and it's the anticipated parking demands to make sure that the parking that's being proposed for the hotel is sufficient to accommodate the demand. And I believe my testimony before was yes, based on the land use category that I chose, that what's being proposed for parking is adequate to serve the peak demand from a parcel specific. If I consider it as a shared use, what I would say is we probably need even less parking. And that's because there is a significant amount of available parking on the business park during the evening hours when the hotel has the highest demand. And so, if the goal would be to only provide enough parking to meet the demands of the business park, I would say the amount of parking that's necessary in the hotel in a true shared parking arrangement would be significantly less because there is plenty of available parking on the adjacent and the shared parking areas to accommodate the hotel as well. So it would be within that lens that I would say that, there's not just sufficient parking for the hotel and the parcel specific, but there's plenty of parking on the business park for the hotel to meet the demands of the hotel.
And as you said, you expect that the hotel can meet its demand with the 110 spaces it's providing alone, correct?
Yes.
But in the event that any overflow parking were needed, would the presence of the other business park parking stalls speak to that?
Yes, I see from that question, yes. So if in the unlikely scenario that there may be an occasion where the parking for the hotel, more parking for the hotel is needed, and if that were to ever occur, my best guess is it would be in the evening because of that's when the peak times are. But even if it were during the day, our analysis, and I believe even the analysis conducted by Transpo showed that there was plenty of available parking on the business park to accommodate if there were an occasional spillover.
Would the presence of that potential, shared parking or overflow parking also be one of the more unusual qualities of this proposed hotel?
Yeah, I think that would be another place that it would be appropriate to apply the language, or to that it would justify the language of an unusual circumstance for the county to consider a deviation.
And Mr. Schramm, I think the possible negative outcomes of having too little parking are pretty well understood. Are there negative outcomes that can come from having too much parking?
Well, just in a yes, I mean, in a general sort of philosophical sense, I'm an engineer. I have an awareness to the environmental impact that that a new development would have. Additional pavement for parking that is unnecessary and unused create. Not speaking as a professional environmentalist or a civil engineer, but just engineering logic would tell me that if more parking is provided than is necessary, it creates an impact to the environment because there's, space that's not utilized that, is creating, other environmental impacts. So, I think there is a potentially a negative element to providing too much parking if it can be shown that there is adequate parking, like in this particular scenario.
Thank you. Mr. Schramm, I know you've been going for a long time. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up with your direct?
I don't think so. I'm good.
All
Thanks.
right. Well, thank you for staying with me. That's all my questions for now.
All right. So I guess we can move to direct, I'm sorry, cross-examination.
Hello, Mr. Schramm. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So,
And it's Duncan Green for the record.
that's right, Duncan
Okay.
Green representing the primary appellants.
I recognize you. Good to see you. Thank you.
Good to see you. I want to start with just talking about the scope of the original TIA, which is Exhibit F8. Is it fair to say the original TIA did not include a parking demand analysis for the hotel? And didn't evaluate whether the 110 hotel parking spaces would be sufficient.
Yes, that's fair.
And it didn't evaluate how the hotel's parking demand would function with the 36 spaces on the east side and 74 spaces on the west.
That is also correct.
And it didn't look at the practical route between the primary entrance to the hotel and the western parking field that has the 74 spaces.
Can you repeat the question? Did you say did it not evaluate the practical route?
The route between the sort of the arrival area and that western parking field.
I'd say, yeah, that generally it did not evaluate the detailed circulation within the site.
And detailed circulation, would that include not analyzing the effect of additional hotel circulation through the KCU parcel or adjacent to the KCU parcel and its drive-through operations.
That's correct.
And it didn't include any analysis of pedestrian vehicle conflicts that could be associated with access to that western parking field.
Also correct.
Okay, thank you. And now turning to your supplemental parking, traffic and parking analysis, which was in Exhibit B5. The document stated August 12th, 2026. You discussed that document obviously quite a bit with Mr. Cartman. The supplemental report, is it true that the supplemental report was created during this appeal process? So the analysis in that document did not exist when the county issued its revised DNS or when the county issued the SDAP acceptance letter?
Yes, that's my understanding.
And before you created your supplemental report, did 10W provide the county with any quantitative analysis addressing hotel parking demand?
No, we did not.
Or any quantitative analysis addressing traffic between Myrie and the Western parking field?
No.
And I'll just mention a few more topics. Any quantitative analysis of traffic circulating around KCU,
Nope.
KCU drive-through interaction,
Nope.
or the assumed guest behavior for the east and west parking fields?
No.
Okay, thank you. So now zooming in a little bit, I want to talk about your statement that you believe less than half of the hotel-generated trips would circulate around KCU. Is it fair to say that your opinion about how many trips would circulate around KCU is based on several premises or assumptions? For example, your testimony explaining that you believe guests leaving this western parking field are likely to use Ridgetop for various reasons?
Yes, that was part of my logic and thinking when I did my estimates.
And was there any data supporting those premises or assumptions, or is it more sort of logic and your opinion?
I did not specify the data or the methodology that I use, but only the results from my statement of less than half and my estimate of 4 to 7. One car every 4 to 7 minutes.
And the explanation you gave today about those assumptions or premises were not contained in your supplemental analysis in Exhibit B5. Is that correct?
That's correct. None of the detail that I described today.
And so the supplemental analysis didn't include any sort of table or attachment assigning hotel trips between Ridgetop and the Myrie to the west parking field route or to other internal routes.
That's correct. It did not include that.
So today the hearing examiner has your conclusion about less than half and the math that you described today, but she doesn't have any internal trip assignment showing how you derived that.
That's correct.
And did the county have any of that, your assumptions or your math at the time it issued the DNS and the SDAP acceptance letter?
No.
In your supplemental analysis, did you conduct any analysis specifically related to the possibility that instead of using Ridgetop or circulating around KCU, guests might instead decide to cut through the KCU drive-through?
I considered it in my assessment of circulation, but I did not anticipate that that number would be significant enough to note it as a typical circulation pattern.
Understood. So it wasn't discussed in your supplemental report.
It wasn't discussed. Nope.
And obviously, you talked about that issue today. I think I heard you say, some people might cut through, but essentially, you didn't think that would rise to the level of significance. Is that a fair summary?
That's fair.
Did you also say that some of the features, like the do not enter sign and the paint markers on the ground that were a little bit faded, would you think those would discourage drivers from heading west through the drive-through?
Yes, I think they are intended to do that, and yes, that's their purpose, is to discourage or restrict drivers from going that direction.
What about guests heading in the other direction to the east? Is there anything to your knowledge that you believe would discourage those kinds of drivers from cutting through?
Can you maybe explain a little bit more what you mean by to the east?
In the photograph we were looking at the do not enter sign, and if I'm orienting myself correctly, in order to ignore the do not enter sign and cut through the drive-through, you'd be heading west. And now I'm talking about the opposite scenario where drivers would be driving the direction where customers of KCU would normally use the drive-through operations.
Okay, I understand now. So, based on that, can you repeat your question, please?
Sure. When guests are coming from the west side of the parking lot, they're heading east. Are there any features like the Do Not Enter sign that we looked at, to your knowledge, that would similarly discourage them from using the KCU drive-through to cut through?
Yeah, I understand the question. There's a couple different ways I think that could be handled with signage. Certainly not a do not enter sign, because we would want to keep the credit union's ability to service their customers to be able to continue to use that. Either signage or communication to the hotel guests, maybe a couple ways to discourage them from using that. I also think naturally some people, I personally, I would think that most people would abide by and recognize the fact that it's a drive-through banking operation. Again, I think signage could help with that. But also the inconvenience, if someone were to try to go that way and there were someone stopped doing drive-through banking, the inconvenience of that, I would think, would discourage them from trying to do it again.
And so you're talking about potential future signage, nothing that exists now.
Right. And I'm sorry, I apologize if that wasn't your question. There's no signage there now. I thought you were asking, would there be ways to discourage that? That was
And
my.
I should have been more specific. It's not a
Okay.
problem at all. And so if you mentioned that if people were customers of KCU were in the drive-through lane, then that might discourage someone from cutting through. What if there were only one or two lanes occupied by KCU customers? Would that logic still apply, given that there are three lanes?
If there were no, it would that logic would be, I would think, different. If we're using the example of a hotel driver, and if they saw the ability to cut through and there was no one in that lane, I could, without any management or communication or signage, I could see that there's a possibility that someone could cut through there.
And I think I heard you say, signs could help. Is there anything in the existing record that evaluates whether those kinds of signs would actually be effective, or how they would be enforced, or who would be responsible for enforcing them?
There's nothing in the record, to my knowledge.
I think I heard you say, in the context of this cut-through scenario, that it might be one car every 4 to 7 minutes or something like that. Am I remembering correctly?
I think for the what I said was, when I added the 10 cars that were identified as cutting through the bank drive-through and the 19 that are cutting through the, let's just call it the hotel lot. When I added, that's 29. It's my understanding from the documentation that those 29 occurred over a 5 hour period. And my testimony was that that is about one car every 5 to 6 minutes.
Every 5 to 6. Okay.
Yep.
And again, this is sort of math that you're presenting for the first time today. That wasn't contained in your TIA or in your supplemental analysis.
That's correct.
What is the shortest route for guests that are entering or leaving the West parking field and want to exit onto Myrie? Is it to circulate around KCU, or is it to cut through the drive-through?
I want to answer your question directly, but I want to clarify, what is the shortest or fastest? Can you add? Because in my opinion, those are different.
Let's start with shortest. What is the physically shortest route?
So you're asking about the shortest route from the back end of the hotel out to Myrie.
Yes.
Shortest distance as a, I'm not trying to be elusive here, the shortest distance as like a direct line or a travel route.
Travel route.
Okay. I would say the shortest distance from the back parking lots of Myrie would be out onto the Ridgetop driveway. Onto Ridgetop and then over to Myrie as a distance.
And that's shorter than cutting through the KCU drive-through.
Again, I haven't measured it. I'm just imagining in my mind, if you factor the amount of linear footage that it takes to go around and circulate around the credit union and then back out. It's probably similar, but again, without, I guess my testimony is my best guess is that I think getting out to Ridgetop might be as a distance a little bit shorter, but I can be corrected on that. I think it's probably pretty similar.
Which route is maybe this may not be a fair phrasing, but a more sort of visually apparent to someone who's leaving the West parking field and wants to get out onto Myrie?
What's is more apparent? That one, that's hard to say. I would say that if a hotel guest is exiting the back parking and they want to get to Myrie, I think the most apparent or obvious route would be onto Ridgetop and using Ridgetop, the street system, to get out there.
Fair enough. And again, at the time of the DNS and the SDAP acceptance letter, you had not done any analysis of that issue or provided any analysis to the county.
That's correct.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your hotel trip generation numbers. Those figures count trips entering and leaving the site. Is that correct?
Correct.
So let's imagine a scenario where a guest enters from Myrie, and then a hotel guest enters from Myrie, stops near the check-in area on the east side, and then drives over to the western field to park the car by any, doesn't matter what route for this question. During the first part of that scenario where the guest stops near the lobby, is that one inbound trip?
Yes, that is one inbound trip.
And then after they have checked in and they get back in their car and they drive over to the west parking field, does that count as a second trip or vehicle movement?
Yeah, good question. I would say for the purposes of how trip generation is estimated, trip generation is estimated based on the entering and exiting trips for a site. I would say in this particular scenario, I would classify that as one continuous trip. And it's still an inbound trip because that trip does not exit the site, the business park. It stays within the business park to circulate to a different parking area.
So in that respect, the trip generation map doesn't capture all of the sort of distinct internal vehicle movements that will happen in, on the ground. Is that right?
My estimate was intended to account for that as well. When I consider the occasional guest who is checking in and then having to park in the back.
How would it account for that if the trip generation math counts it as one movement?
Well, I've accounted for it in as much as I've accounted for the fact that a large portion or a large element of guests for WoodSpring Suites are extended stay, guests who stay for multiple days. So, unfortunately, the IT trip generation manual doesn't help us understand what proportion those are, but understanding that it does make up a good, portion of their guest utilization, I factored it into my thinking in that not every entering and exiting trip is for check-in purposes. Many of the returning vehicles who are inbound to the site will have been returning without the need for a check-in.
And so I guess the scenario I'm describing and the potential for counting it as two movements doesn't apply to those guests who've already finished the check-in, but it was fair to say it at least applies to the guests who are arriving for the first time.
Yeah, that's fair.
You've also talked about how your estimate that roughly one hotel vehicle every 4 to 7 minutes would be added to the circulation. I know I'm not saying that in the best way possible, but is that a fair
That's fair. That's reasonable. Yeah.
That's an average rate based on an average of numbers that were measured in hourly increments in the table that you discussed. Is that right?
That's correct.
Is it accurate that you did not analyze whether hotel-related traffic, for example, through the KCU area would possibly be concentrated during shorter peak periods, for example, during the busiest 15-minute interval?
Yeah, it's certainly possible that in a shorter increment than an hour, that there may be somewhat higher traffic generation during a shorter time period. It's possible.
And you didn't perform any observational conflict study of the relevant KCU circulation area, is that right?
I did not. That's correct.
But you and Mr. Cartman today did look at some Google Street View images. In the transportation industry, is that an accepted method for evaluating circulation and safety issues?
I would say it's a part of our methodology. I didn't rely on it exclusively. I also relied upon my own site visit and time spent circulating on the site to inform my assessment.
Is it fair to say that it wasn't complete in the sense that you could only assess the angles from which those photographs were taken, and there are some angles that wouldn't be captured by those selected Street View images?
I would say if I were making my entire assessment just on those images, yes, I would be limiting, but I believe that I can gain a lot of information by even just looking at an aerial where we can see where the circulation patterns are and where the drive aisles are designed with respect to the parking area. So it's not just those images that inform my assessment. It's also, like I said, my own time spent on the site, but also looking at the aerial photo of how circulation occurs on the site.
Makes sense. So during your time spent on the site, did you have any experience with what some of the witnesses, including our witness from KCU, described as sort of conflicts and pinch points to the rear of the building that weren't shown in those Google Street View images?
I heard all the testimony yesterday. Can you repeat the question?
I'm referring to some testimony about vehicle conflicts, sort of toward the rear of the KCU building, where drivers, it was there are limited views around coming around the corner, and there have been some fender benders and near misses, I believe the testimony. Just wondering if you had any direct observation of those areas that were not shown in the Google Street View images.
If you're asking me if I had some experience, yes, the time that I spent on the site circulating the site, I was able to see that and notice, how it was designed. Certainly can't speak to the day-to-day that the witness did because I don't haven't spent that much time on the site.
And your parking count observers, they were counting parked vehicles, correct?
Yeah, we counted parked vehicles. Yes.
And they were not collecting pedestrian conflict data, for example.
That's correct.
You testified that 10W collected some project-specific trip data at actual WoodSpring Suites hotels. Did you examine whether those other hotels had the same parking configuration as this project?
Examined. I reviewed the site plans for the three existing hotels to ensure that the layout and the configuration, the number of rooms, for example, were reasonably consistent with what was being proposed at this location.
I'm sorry, you said number of rooms, and what was the other factor?
The parking layout and well, I wouldn't say circulation. I observed just the general layout of the site and how it's configured with respect to where the building is related to parking areas. Just made sure that order of magnitude it was similar in size and function.
And remind us, where were those other three existing sites?
Yes. Take me a minute to pull that up.
Sure, take your time.
I know one was in Redmond. I just want to make sure I get this right. Okay. And if you're going to ask me to identify an exhibit number, I'm going to, or the appendix, I didn't write that down. So,
I won't ask that, at least
okay.
not at this point. Just if you're able to figure out the locations of the other two sites, that would be helpful, but we can
Yep.
circle back to that as well.
No, I have it right here.
Great.
Redmond, Washington. Here we go. Everett, Washington, and Lakewood, Washington.
Lakewood. Okay, thank you. Did any of those three sites put about two-thirds of their parking behind the hotel?
Ooh, that I would to give you an accurate answer, I'd probably have to go back and look at the documentation, but yeah, so I can't say for certain whether that was that proportion.
This may be the same answer, but do you recall if any of them required guests using a main entrance to sort of circulate around a neighboring bank or other similar, adjacent parcel to reach the majority of the parking?
This one I can't answer because we selected three sites that had their exclusive access was only provided to the hotel. And the reason for that was, whether you're asking this or not, I'm going to offer the reason for that is because when we wanted to make sure we collected accurate data at hotels that did not share access, a hotel that shares access with other uses is difficult to separate and quantify the hotel only trips when they're shared access. So for that reason, the three sites we picked did not have adjacent or adjoining or uses that they shared a site with.
So is it fair to say then if none of those sites shared access, maybe they had other features that were different, the WoodSpring specific trip generation data don't establish that the particular site circulation geometry for those sites would function the same way as this site?
The purpose of and the collection of data was for the purpose of identifying total entering and exiting trips. It was not an assessment of this particular circulation patterns of any of the hotels.
There's essentially outside the scope of that
Co
analysis.
correct. We didn't study circulation as part of that data collection effort.
And that project-specific WoodSpring data measured vehicle trips, not peak parking occupancy. Is that right?
That's correct. Vehicle trips
And
only.
just to go back to basics, trip generation and parking occupancy are two different measurements.
That's correct.
Is it, I think I may have heard you testify to this, but is it true that extended stay guests generally have less room turnover than transient hotel guests?
So I would say that's a little bit out of my area of expertise in terms of hotel operations. So I'm not comfortable making an assessment on that.
Okay, I'll just maybe ask you to sort of make an assumption that that's the case. If a guest stays 30 days or 60 days or 95 days and keeps a vehicle on site, would that guest occupy a parking stall for a longer period of time than a transient hotel guest?
It's hard to say, not necessarily, because I'm sure I can think of several scenarios where someone who's staying an extended period may have a vehicle, they may not have a vehicle. So it's hard to say whether how they would be different from a more transient user.
Well, I guess assuming that they do have a vehicle, would that guest then be occupying a parking stall for a longer period of time?
Not necessarily, because someone who's staying there over a long period of time could be someone who still parks at night and leaves during the day for another meeting or function, or might be working, for the hospital, for example. They might just be driving up to the hospital another use and then park. So the parking characteristics for a transient or a extended stay, I wouldn't necessarily say they're going to be significantly different.
If I guess conversely, if an extended stay guest were the type of guest you just described and they're making more frequent trips, would that maybe that means they're not occupying the parking as long, but wouldn't that mean more circulation?
Again, not necessarily. Just because someone stays over a period of multiple days doesn't mean they're making more or less trips. Doesn't mean they're staying on the site. It could be that they're just staying there for business or other reasons. So I don't think I can make that direct connection.
Let's shift to talking about the ITE trip generation codes. We talked about primarily two codes, limited service hotels, which I believe was LUC 311, and all suites, LUC 312. Is that right?
That's right.
Would you agree that there's no ITE parking category specifically for extended stay hotels like WoodSpring Suites?
I'm going to ask you to answer the or ask the question because I want to make sure I'm give me a second to think about it.
Sure. Is there any ITE parking category specifically for extended stay hotels like WoodSpring Suites?
There's not a specific category in ITE specific for WoodSpring Suites. No, there's not.
So choosing the closest proxy, whether it's 311 or 312, requires some amount of professional judgment.
Yes, but no more different than a category like a fast food restaurant that captures Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, Taco Bell. There's a lot of different types of restaurant uses that are categorized in a fast food, just like there may be several different hotel chains that are still captured within a land use category.
Do you agree that LUC 311 is at least a potentially relevant comparison category?
Yeah, I think it's comparable.
When you ended up selecting LUC 312, did you consider whether WoodSpring rooms have kitchens?
Yeah, it was one of our considerations, but I focus more on the other uses within the hotel that, like restaurants and meeting rooms, that would be more influential on parking and traffic generation.
I think I heard you testify that, to the extent lack of food service had an impact, it could suggest that parking could be lower than the ITE rates. So just wondering if there's any data supporting that testimony, or were you speculating?
I was speculating based on my experience. I don't have data to support it.
You testified about guests potentially being advised, I think, at the front desk about the fact that the majority of parking is in the back. Is that an assumption that they would be advised, or is that supported by any data?
That's an assumption, and also based on my own personal experience, I don't have any evidence that has occurred or would occur. That's my expectation.
And of course, if a guest is parking before they walk into the building, they wouldn't be advised until after they've already parked, right?
That's correct.
Was it also an assumption that guests who were advised would actually follow that advice and park in the back instead of doing their own thing, parking somewhere perhaps closer?
Certainly debatable. I think some people obey signs and that's important to them, and others ignore them. So,
And then you testified about returning guests. I think you were saying, if a guest were advised to park in the back and then they did park in the back, then when they return, they're likely to repeat that behavior. What about these other naughty guests that we're talking about now who instead decided to park somewhere else? Would that naughty decision also be likely to be repeated over time for returning guests?
I'm just going to object to the phrasing of that question. The word.
I'll strike the word naughty. Those other guests.
Okay. Guests who maybe wouldn't have, be a
Non-compliant guests.
non-compliant. Thank you. Yeah, that's a fair question. I think that the way I would answer this, and I understand what you're asking, I think I would start with the fact that people are going to park at the location that's most convenient to them. So my testimony and my assessment of how many people and estimate are circulating around takes that into consideration. So I've figured that, if somebody is returning to the hotel during the day and they come in off of Myrie and they see there's a parking spot available, they're going to take it, even though the night before they may have parked in the back. But I also think there's a reasonable amount of guests that is if they're staying for an extended period of time, they're comfortable. They know, hey, I know this spot's available. I know it's right in front of the building. I'm not going to mess around with circulating or trying to find a last spot in the front. I'm just going to go straight to the back. It's easier for me. So I think you have both happening, and I've tried to account for that in my assessment.
Is it fair to say that it's somewhat hard to predict how people are going to behave in these situations?
Yes, I would say it's hard to predict, and I've done my best to try to quantify as best I can what I think that the amount of circulation would be.
Now, let's focus on the amount of available reserve capacity for parking during higher demand conditions. Is it fair to say as a parking area starts to approach full occupancy, drivers will have fewer available choices?
Yes, that's fair.
And is it also fair to say it then becomes more important that drivers can readily locate the remaining available spaces in those situations?
Yeah, I think that's also fair.
Would you also agree that even if 110 spaces might be numerically sufficient on some days, the actual functioning of the system as a whole will depend, at least in part, on whether the Western spaces are practically used?
Yes, I think understanding the how the 110 stalls will be utilized, yes, we have to consider how those, let's just call them the front stalls, would be utilized because it's in a shared parking environment with the credit union.
In your testimony today, you described some of the elements of a potential parking management plan. But just to confirm, your supplemental analysis in Exhibit B5 and your TIA didn't contain any parking management plan designed to ensure that guests use the appropriate spaces. Is that right?
That's correct.
You also shared your opinion that you don't think a parking management plan is needed to avoid a significant adverse impact. But at the time of the DNS, did the county have access to any information about whether a parking management plan might be needed or appropriate?
No, because at that point we hadn't done or provided any parking evaluation.
Is the same true at the time of the issuance of the SDAP acceptance letter?
Yes, I believe that's accurate.
So we heard that 10W observed about 215 parked vehicles and Transpo observed about 216. And so you would agree the two firms independently corroborated the 2026 observed condition.
Yeah, we found almost exact same.
But that agreement on 215, 216 doesn't establish whether the business park was fully occupied during either of the two observation periods in 2026, does it?
My assessment and collection of parking did not, do a detailed review of occupancy of the existing uses.
So you didn't look at whether KCU was operating with fewer employees than under normal operating conditions,
I did not.
or whether the you didn't look at the unused capacity at the doctor's clinic.
I did not.
And so the 215, 216 figures are a measurement of what was happening in 2026, but it's not a measurement of the full occupancy condition. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, I can't personally say that because I didn't evaluate the occupancy. When I believe when Transport collected their data was several months after we collected ours. So at the time I didn't collect it, and so I can't say whether what the occupancy levels were during the 72-hour period that we collected parking data.
Thank you. Your aggregate shared parking analysis assumes that hotel parking demand to some extent exists during daytime business hours, correct?
Yes, there will be some.
And so that demand would overlap with the parking demand at KCU and in the medical office and other business park uses, correct?
Yes.
And what differs is the time at which each of the uses would reach its peak, not whether there's any overlap.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear a question. Did you?
Yeah, it was poorly worded. I'll just move on from there. Does your analysis identify which of the neighboring parcels might absorb any extra hotel parking demand if the hotel's convenient spaces are occupied?
No, we did not do a detailed review of or assessment of the specific locations of shared parking. We looked at it as a whole business park.
And aggregate capacity is not the same thing as functional distribution of parking, correct?
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Just to confirm, I think you testified that if transit has any impact at all on parking, it would not be material. Is that?
Right, it'd be very minimal, in my opinion.
Let's talk a little bit about the retail comparison. Your analysis of the retail use that was originally planned for the parcel focused on external trips, and concluded that the hotel generates fewer external trips than the retail use, right?
External defined as trips that are generated into and out of the site, away from the site, onto the street system. Yes.
And that doesn't tell us whether the two site layouts have the same internal circulation pattern, correct?
That comparison does not assess that.
Didn't the retail plan split most of its parking from the main building access?
The retail site plan had parking circulation identified between the retail building and the credit union bank.
And it didn't require the same kind of circulation around KCU to get from Myrie to a parking field on the west, correct?
Well, I don't know if I'd say it didn't require it. The way that that site laid out identified the bank drive-through area on the north side. So that would not be a circulation pattern for the retail users. The layout of the bank showed a circulation aisle on the bank property on the south border, which would have also provided a circulation between the retail and the bank building.
Let me ask sort of a permutation on that same question. The KCU drive-through layout is currently an existing condition. If you take that existing condition and retail The type of retail shown in the original site plan were constructed, that retail would not require circulation around KCU. Is that right?
Yes, and just to be clear, maybe if what you're saying is if I were to insert the previous plan for the retail building and circulation pattern onto the site where the credit union exists, there would be circulation between the buildings that would not require circulation around the credit union.
That was my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Did it better than I could. Just a few more questions here. I think it was in your TIA, you testified today about crash data. Was that data all related to external intersections?
No, I would say that we collected crash data at the two external intersections and, excuse me, at the four existing driveways that serve the business park.
And the crash data at the driveways, are those collisions that occurred sort of within the driveway or somewhere further inside the business park?
Yeah, I understand the question now. I would say that these are based on crash reports that where the driveway is intersecting with the public street, and not necessarily involving an internal circulation
None of the
consideration.
crash data involved that kind of internal circulation beyond the driveways.
Correct.
I want to pull up one exhibit, but I'm not as tech savvy as Mr. Cartman, so I'm going to ask the clerk if she would help me pull up one exhibit. This is F20,
F20.
and it's the access exhibit that the applicant provided.
Right, one sec. Let me share a screen here.
Thank you. And would you please zoom in to the, yep, like that. That's great. And Mr. Schramm, would you just sort of narrate or I guess describe? No, strike that question. Let me just jump to the next one. You obviously didn't design this hotel project. Sorry, just make one more adjustment here. The client said, this is our design, and they said, please review this design. And I think your testimony today was, this design won't cause significant adverse impacts. But I want to ask you to put your designer hat on, looking at this access exhibit. If you could design the site and your goal were to facilitate the flow of traffic, is this how you would design it?
Well, let me start by saying that I'm not a site designer. That's my area of expertise is to study the obviously the transportation elements of circulation. So I just again, not trying to be elusive, but just trying to, establish that I don't design sites.
Sure.
So given that, would it be okay for me to ask you to restate the question?
Sure. In your opinion, does this design facilitate the flow of traffic?
Yes.
What if your goal were to maximize the safety of traffic ingress and egress? Does this maximize the safety of traffic ingress and egress?
I wouldn't say that it maximizes it.
Does it maximize the safety of pedestrians and vehicular traffic on the site?
I wouldn't say that it maximizes it. Nope.
Thank you. I'm going to pull up one more exhibit. This is the CCNRs in exhibit F25. And if we could turn to page, this is the page numbering in red at the bottom. I believe we've been calling that PDF page number 24. And I'll just, Mr. Schramm, direct your attention to paragraph 8, section 8.1. And earlier on, you testified you're not offering a legal interpretation of the CCNRs, but you did read the document and that your analysis considered the CCNRs, and your read was that they provide for shared parking. Is that right?
Yes, that was my testimony.
So as you considered the CCNRs in your analysis, did you consider whether there is any limit to the location or amount of parking that is shared?
I would say that as part of my initial read of the documentation, I don't recall seeing any limitation.
Did your analysis of the CCNRs, was your reading that the CCNRs also provide not only shared parking, but shared access to the shared parking?
Yeah, that was my understanding.
And so I'll ask the same question I just asked before. Did you consider whether there's any limit to the location, amount, or type of shared access?
Did I consider where there is any limit of shared access? I can think of a couple things where I considered it. In the original traffic study, we evaluated the level service at each of the four driveways. So when we evaluated it, the level service without the hotel and then with the hotel. So as an example, somewhat extreme example, but if the additional traffic generated by the hotel would create a significant increase in delay or conflicts at a driveway access point, for example, as part of our assessment, then I would consider that as, whether it would have an impact that would need to be mitigated or changed the current access for the business park. And so our analysis indicated that there was no significant level service issues or delays by adding the additional traffic generated by the hotel.
And did you read section 8.1 as part of your review?
I'm sure I did.
Would you mind reading, and I guess you can just start with the highlighted language here at the bottom of the current page that we're looking at now. It starts with non-exclusive easement for ingress and egress.
Yeah, I can. I'm assuming it continues. So, who's ever
It
sharing?
does,
Okay.
yeah.
All
So
right. I
we'll
follow along here.
Yes.
I'll just read it. Non-exclusive easement for ingress and egress by vehicular and pedestrian traffic, utilities and vehicular parking upon, over, under, and across that portion of the common area.
And then would you continue on through the end of that sentence?
Okay. Common area located on the grantor's parcel or parcels as described on Exhibit B, except for those areas devoted to service facilities, standalone coffee stands, or drive-up or drive-through customer service facilities.
And when you were considering the CCNRs as part of your transportation analysis, did you consider whether this section 8.1 excluded drive-throughs from the shared access to the shared parking?
Not specifically, I did not.
Okay, thank you. We can close that exhibit. Thanks for your help. Toward the end of your testimony, I think I heard you say, knowing what we know now, you would change the trip assignment, and you estimate a shift of 10 to 12 cars that you would pull from Myrie and assign to Ridgetop. Is that reassessment based on the math we discussed earlier, where you estimated that less than half of the guests from the western parking area would cut through KCU?
Yeah, that was part of the same consideration and assessment that I did.
And it would be based on the same sort of premises or assumptions that we discussed.
Yes, that's fair.
And obviously, that sort of reassessment that you just gave to us and the hearing examiner not contained in your TIA or your supplemental analysis.
I'm sorry, can either you got cut off or I didn't hear the
Oh,
question.
sorry. Reassessment about shifting cars from Myrie to Ridgetop. That reassessment was not contained in your TIA or your supplemental analysis.
That's correct.
And so this is a different analysis that you're providing for the first time today in your hearing testimony.
Yes.
Last topic, you were also asked about a hypothetical, what would happen if KCU access were cut off physically or legally? Is that right?
Yes.
And I think I heard you say it could create a significantly circuitous route. Is that
Yeah,
fair?
that's fair. I think I said that.
And you couldn't rule out a significant adverse impact?
I said I was not willing to rule whether it was significant or not because I hadn't had done enough evaluation of that scenario.
And is it fair to say you didn't analyze that hypothetical situation before today?
That's correct.
And it's also accurate that that is not what the applicant is proposing.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't have any further questions.
What's the exhibit on the CCNRs?
That was F25.
Okay, thank you. All right, is there any additional cross-examination?
Yeah, we just have a couple of questions.
Okay, proceed.
Great, thank you. Hi, Mr. Schramm. I'm Megan Raymond representing Anchor Health, which is the third appellant in this case. I do really think these are only a couple questions, so shouldn't take too much more of your time because I know it's been a marathon. All right, so just orientation a bit. What's your understanding for this project of the portion of guest rooms that are suites versus non-suites for this hotel?
I don't have in front of me an assessment of what proportion are suites versus non-suites. I don't know that.
Okay. So you're not sure if these are if there are some standard, I guess, some standard hotel rooms versus all suites in this hotel.
What I'm saying is I don't know what the proportion of the different hotel room types are.
Okay, thank you. All right, so you testified a bit about the traffic studies you did for those other WoodSpring, it sounds like three other WoodSpring suite hotels in the state. Were those hotels roughly similar to the proposed project here in terms of number of guest rooms and whether these were standard versus extended stay hotels?
I can't specifically speak to whether WoodSpring Suites considers them extended stay hotels. But what I can tell you is that we chose the three based on the, like I had testified before, primarily looking at similar size. So yes, all three were similar size in terms of number of rooms, and they were sites that had their own access point onto the city streets, which allowed us to accurately collect the number of trips in and out.
Okay. Did you look at or do you know what the parking ratio was for those other sites? Here, there's a I guess a little under a 1-to-1 ratio. Do you know what the ratio was for those? I think I'm here. There's 122 rooms and 110 spaces proposed. Do you know about what it was for those others?
I don't have that information directly in front of me in terms of a direct comparison. That wasn't part of our data collection, so I don't have that information.
Okay. I want to pull up first two exhibits, B5, and actually my colleague Ken is going to pull this up. I believe. There we go. Okay, so if we can go to page two, please. Okay, so this is your supplemental parking study. And I want to focus on the part that says the parking reduction is justified for reasons including the following. Can you read that first bullet, please?
Yes, I'm gonna
We could,
look up
we
at
can,
it.
can you
You
zoom
can
in
either,
on?
if you could either zoom in a little, or I can look at a larger screen I have in front of me. Okay.
Oh, there we
Okay.
go.
Thank you. Can you say that again? You want me to read the
Yeah,
first
just
bullet?
the first bullet,
Yep.
please.
The first bullet says the unusual nature of the project indicates that the type of hotel is different than a general hotel use that county code used to identify a parking rate.
Okay. So can you clarify what is unusual in terms of parking characteristics for an extended stay hotel compared to a general hotel use?
Yes. What I would class, what I consider, the reason that I considered what's being proposed as unusual is because the county's parking requirement and by code is just based on a general hotel category. When I look at the parking demand characteristics of different hotel types, I believe there's enough differentiation between a general hotel, which is what I believe the county code is based on. There's enough difference in the characteristics of the hotel for WoodSpring Suites that would justify, in my opinion, the unusual nature because of the parking demand characteristics are different for that hotel type than a general hotel.
Okay. And when you say you believe the county code is based on a general hotel type, can you explain why you think that?
Well, because it, I mean, it's, well, let me explain it this way. In my experience, most jurisdictional codes have a limited number of categories, nowhere near the number of categories that exist, for example, in the ITE parking generation manual. And that's purposeful because listing all of them would be a real challenge. So, what this county has done, which many jurisdictions do, is they have generally categorized a hotel, in a single land use category. That, in my opinion, is, well, I think I'm losing my train of thought. Sorry, can you repeat the question again?
No, that's fine. The question was kind of, you had said that the county code is based off of a general hotel use for the one-to-one requirement rather than extended stay. And I was wondering
Yeah.
why you are saying
Okay. Yeah, no, that thank you for getting me back on track. So
that.
what I'm willing to continue to say is that the county decided in their code to only designate one hotel type. They could have, for example, designated a different parking requirement for a different hotel type. Just like and I'm going to use this as an example, but I have to check this for the county, but the county code and most codes probably have different parking requirements for different types of residential uses, single family, multifamily, et cetera. And that's, on purpose, and they have different parking code requirements. In this case, the county chose to only have a single category. And so I think that that category doesn't accurately describe, in my opinion, the parking generation characteristics of the proposed hotel. That's why I would consider it to apply for the to apply to the unusual nature provision.
Okay, thank you for explaining that. How did you factor in the extended stay nature of the proposed project for your parking analysis?
So for the parking analysis, I did not. And the reason for that is because the parking generation data provided by the IT manual does not provide a differentiation based on the extended stay nature of a hotel. What it does do, and I have it in my supplemental document in my testimony, it provides other comparative elements like presence of a restaurant, presence of meeting rooms, and things like that. what the IT data does not indicate is the extended stay nature of the hotel as a differentiator in terms of parking generation characteristic or parking generation numbers. So therefore, I was not able to apply the same characteristic or determine whether extended stay element, how that would affect the parking generation nature. Where I did consider the extended stay nature was not in the parking, but in the circulation evaluation that I testified previously.
Okay. If you wanted to learn more about how the extended stay nature of a hotel would impact parking, how would you go about that?
Interesting question. If I wanted to understand, I would first want to make sure that I had a reasonable comparison. So if I was understanding, I would need to know I would have to be able to compare the percentage or the amount of guests, presumably that's available from a hotel user, the number of guests and number of nights that are guests that are extended stay. And then if, whenever possible, identify then how much parking is required for those by collecting that data, and then compare that to a hotel type that has a different characteristic or amount or percentage of extended stay, and then calculate the amount of parking generation in that. That would be probably the most appropriate way to do that type of comparison.
Ken, if you can go to the next page, please, of B5 still. Okay, so this is the table one. If we can scroll down just a little bit more to get the, oh, there we go, to get the whole table. Okay, so I just want to connect this to what you were saying earlier about the unusual nature of the hotel. So I believe you testified that what seems to be unusual is that, or the reason you say that is because the county code 1-to-1 ratio is probably based off of a general hotel. This is different, and so that justifies a park. That's part of the justification for a parking reduction. Is that correct?
I think that's a fairly good representation. Maybe what I would say was when considering a parking deviation, I believe that there's enough differentiating elements of these different hotel types to qualify, in my professional opinion, as unusual, and as it relates to application and utilization of a justification for a deviation.
Okay, thank you. That was better than what I said. So help me square this with in table one, the weekday parking rate for our general hotel land use code 10, 310 is 0.64. And I think that folks would can agree. I'd assume that weekday is what matters here, at least to our client. And I think the other clients who are primarily open on the weekdays. So the parking rate for general hotels. It is. I'm sorry. I need to back up. Okay. So the parking rate for general hotels, weekday parking rate is lower than limited service hotels, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So can. Do you understand where I'm having a little bit of a disconnect here, where I think you're saying that the county code seems to be based off of a general hotel, something more akin to a general hotel use, but our understanding here is that the requirements for or the ITE data would suggest that something, a limited stay hotel, that the proposed parking should actually be higher than a general hotel. Is that right?
Yes, I understand the question. I understand the concern. I have actually looked at this very specifically as well. So here's what I'd say on that, the weekday peak parking rate is one characteristic of parking demand for a hotel. It's an important characteristic, right? We want to make sure when we're, looking at a hotel that there's going to be sufficient parking to meet their peak demand, right? What is not clear from the data, what I can tell you based on my professional experience, is that while the week, not while the weekday parking demand peak, as you can see between all three hotels, is very similar. And that's not a surprise to me because the peak for a hotel per room is from midnight to 4 a.m. So regardless of what's happening during the day, a hotel generally, even across these three categories, has about the same amount of peak parking in the evening. Where the characteristics change the most are during the day. And so my testimony before in some of our documentation where we identified the amount of parking throughout a 24-hour period, if we were to look at the detailed parking generation throughout the day, especially times during the day when hotels have meeting rooms, events, restaurants, you'll find that the parking demand during those hours of the day are higher for a hotel than they are for a limited service hotel. So peak parking is one characteristic differentiation. I think that the rest of the differentiations were important to me when justifying a deviation because I wanted to make sure that there was, a clear understanding that I believe that there's sufficient parking to handle not just the peak, but the varying parking demands throughout the day, based on the availability of parking on the business park.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, last, just two more quick questions. This will be on a switching gears to exhibit F28. I just want to know if you're familiar with this. This is a memo that was put together by AHBL, who was hired. Sorry, I know it's not up on your screen yet. Just giving you a little preview. But
Sorry, can you see that? I'm trying to
yeah, now
share it.
I
now
can
we
see it
can.
now. Yep.
Okay, perfect.
So this was a memo from AHBL to the county. I think in response to a county's request for additional information regarding parking before the SDOF was issued. Have you seen this before?
I have seen it. I don't know what the exhibit number is for the record. Maybe
Oh
that might be
yeah, this is
helpful to state.
F28.
F28. Okay, yes. Okay. That's yes, I'm familiar. I've seen this memo. Yes.
Okay, so if you go to page two, Ken. So again, this is what was submitted to the county, a little bit lower act, or yeah, there we go on for deviation request. This is what was submitted to the county, before the county approved, the request for the parking deviation through the SDOP. And so I think based off your testimony too, this was the only, you had not conducted a parking study that was submitted prior to the county's approval of the SDOP, right?
Right. I think what you're asking is that I mean, I don't want to project what you're asking, but I was not familiar with this memo before it was submitted, and I had no, eyes on it or any ability to review it or weigh in on it. So this was done independently by one of the civil engineer for the project.
Okay.
I only saw it after it was submitted.
Understood. Okay, can you read the last sentence of this deviation request, please?
Sure. The reduction is requested based on the previously approved Highlands Business Park parking table, as well as the proximity of the site to transit service.
Okay. And this is my last question, but does that comply with your understanding of why the deviation should be granted here?
Can you ask that again? Does that
Yeah,
come?
so well, I guess I can provide a little bit so I'm not, I don't need to beat around the bush on what I'm saying, I guess. Is proximity of the site to transit service part of the reason you believe the parking reduction is justified?
No, it is not.
Okay. And is the previous 2005 parking table that was approved, is that relevant to the deviation request?
No, I don't. I wouldn't consider it to be relevant to the reasons that I identified for justifying a deviation request.
Okay. Mr. Schramm, those are all of my questions. Thank you so much for bearing with me.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. think this point redirect unless was did you have Mr. Wachter, did you have any questions for this witness?
I have a couple
Oh, you do?
questions.
Okay. Are there any further? There's no further cross. We've completed cross, correct? So, Ms. Watcher, turn to you for your any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Schramm. This is Neil Wachter. I'm the attorney for Kitsap County. Nice to finally get to speak with you.
Yes, can I ask that just so like it's always better I'm sitting in a room all day to see faces. Can yeah, thank you. If you could take that.
Yeah, and
Yes,
I'm
this.
trying to, just FYI, I'm trying to keep my camera on, but it clicks off. I'm not sure why every so often. So,
That's
but.
okay. I'm not sure why it's helpful that looking at a blank screen. So thank you.
I was curious about the range of hotels that you believe are within the category of hotels under the Kitsap County Code, and how many different species of hotels are there?
That's a great question. I don't have it in front of me. I could quickly look it up. I believe that there are maybe up to six. There are three hotel categories that I mentioned here in my documentation testimony. I believe that there are also a couple of motel categories, but I would have to go back to the IT parking generation manual to confirm how many.
Do you know whether they're, let me strike that question. You're aware of the hospital in Silverdale, St. Vincent?
Yes, maybe a
Or
block or two to the
sorry, I think
north.
I most misspoke. It's St.
Yeah,
Michael Medical
St.
Center.
Michael. Yes, I am aware.
And do you know if there are any hotels in Silverdale that would be closer to that medical center than the proposed WoodSpring Suites?
I am not aware of any existing hotels that are closer or would be closer than the proposed Wood Suites location, but I would love to double check that, but that's based on my general knowledge.
Can you say or can you articulate where is the transit stop that is nearest to the WoodSpring Suites Hotel?
I believe. I'd have to again, I have to go back to my notes. I believe that there's a transit stop on both sides of Myrie Road. I believe one transit stop is directly across the street, meaning on the east side of Myrie Road, right at the northern Myrie Road driveway. And I believe that's for a transit bus going northbound. I believe the southbound transit stop on Myrie Road is about midway, if I remember right, between on the west side of Myrie Road, between the two Myrie Road driveways. I think it's about midway between both of them.
Do you know whether public transit, meaning buses, directly connect the hotel property with the St. Michael Medical Center?
Again, I'd have to double check this, but I believe there is one route that does travel north south on Myrie Road that would connect. But I have to double check that as well.
Do you know whether the hotel site was selected by WoodSpring Suites to specifically serve the population of persons who would have reason to come visit the hospital complex?
I do not have direct knowledge whether that was a intention of the hotel or not.
Does that seem like a reasonable reason to site a hotel?
To me, it does, yes.
Bear with me, I'm looking through many pages of notes. I wonder what consideration, let me rephrase. The question of shared parking It occurred to me that the westerly parking lot of the hotel site is accessible only from the north side of the property, correct?
That's correct.
Are you aware of any alternatives that were considered to allow for a southerly access to that parking area on the west side of the proposed hotel?
I'm not aware of any alternatives identified by the hotel or their development team on this particular site. No.
Does your evaluation consider the question of public safety and the ability to exit or enter a property under emergency circumstances?
I would say that my assessment when I'm looking at parking, trip generation, and circulation very much considers safety. And safety is a very general category, but some of the things that I look at are crash data, history, sight lines, sight distance, circulation patterns. Certainly, one of the ones you just mentioned is something I'd consider. Whether the drive aisles through a site are wide enough and the corners in general appear to meet a circulation requirement for a turning emergency vehicle. I'm not going to suggest that I have evaluated the exact detail. I would trust that a site plan that was approved and built will have been built to the standard, but I'm just as an eyeball looking at if there are, for example, locations where I might consider there to be limited sight distance or conflict points, I would consider that in my assessment.
And going back to the potential guests for this proposed hotel, would you agree with the proposition that this particular site is that there is a probability that it will host guests who are temporary employees or contract employees of the hospital facility?
I can only offer my opinion that I think it would make sense given the proximity to the hospital, just like any other prominent business in the area that might have a need for guests or employees to have the need for a hotel. I could see that, hotel would be a good location for there to be an agreement or arrangement to accommodate someone like a hotel, I'm sorry, like a hospital or business practice.
Okay, thank you. Those are all my questions.
Okay.
And redirect would be next, Mr. Cartman, but I just want to check in with the parties because we're at 3:48. Typically, we do have a 15-minute mid-afternoon break. How much time are we looking at for redirect, Mr. Cartman?
I do have a number of questions, but I think most of them are short, so perhaps 20 minutes.
Okay, because what I'm wondering is if we go ahead and finish with this witness and then maybe rather than taking our mid-afternoon, we recess a little after this witness, after we've talked about procedural issues and who's next and all that.
That would be, I'm sorry.
Oh, you want me to repeat what I just
No,
said?
I'm sorry. I just didn't mean to interrupt you. I was about to say that would be fine with me, as long as Mr. Schramm is okay.
Mr. Schramm, you holding up okay?
I would love a 5-minute potty break. I'm all for finishing early, trust me. So if but I
Yeah, no,
do.
I do. If anyone's in discomfort, do let me know. So tell you what, why don't we do a 5-minute break, try to wrap up this witness today so we get out before 5 maybe. Do the parties on board with that? Okay, I'm hearing senile nods. So let's do that. It
Yep.
is 3:49. We will reconvene at 3:55.
Thank you.
We are briefly recessed.